I am Deborah Abisola, and this is the podcast for the underdogs. My guest and I share our corporate journey as working class professionals, and along the way, we have some fun. Let's get into it, and welcome to Deborah's Corporate Heart Talk. Hi, and welcome back to another episode of Deborah's Corporate Heart Talk. My name is Deborah, and on this episode, I am having a virtual sit-down with my brother and sister, Emmanuel and Esther Abadurin. And what we're doing is talking to you about a project that we're working on due to COVID-19. We have decided to fundraise for single mothers in Nigeria in order to help them cope with the harsh reality of COVID-19. It was a fun episode, I tell you. But the key thing here is I would plead with you to help us hit our target of £2,200. Please have a look at our Just Giving page, which I will link to this episode. We started the episode in such a fun way with a game. Yes, a game. A game where we have specific words or sentences that's linked to COVID-19. And we individually spoke of our experiences regarding those words and sentences. Guys, have a listen and have fun. And most importantly, please visit our Just Giving page and donate. Thank you and God bless. How you're doing with COVID-19? Has it been a shocker for you? Has it, been blasé for you? I really want to know. But instead of asking you, the normal typical question of how has it been, I would love for us to play a little game, right? So in this game, what we'll do is I'm going to give you a sentence or a word that has to do with COVID-19. With all the experiences that we've had in the past couple of weeks. And then you just tell me a story about that, what's happened about that, right? So let's have a practice one, yeah?
Okay.
If I get a word like toilet roll, the first thing I'm going to say was toilet roll became scarce. It was so scary. We didn't even stock up. We were not stockpiling. We were not doing any of that stuff. But we, at one point, we had to start looking. Once, my husband drove 30 minutes around our area to find toilet tissue. So it's been, some days I'm like, what are we living in? Is this really the world that I was living in December, right? So that's my little experience with toilet roll. So I'll start with you, Emmanuel. I'll give you a word. If I say news.
The first thing I think of is don't watch or stay away. I think definitely when COVID-19 first started, I was one of those people that was just always watching the news and going on YouTube and watching those sort of scientific videos about the virus and the scary looking sort of molecules destroying people's lungs. And then after a while, I just got fed up. So I just stopped watching the news, and I have to say it's been much better. I do check in now and then just to see whether we're allowed to go out or not, but for the most part, I stay away.
Yeah. What about you, Esther? What have you thought about the news? Have you been watching or?
No, I'm very similar to Emmanuel, actually. Initially I was watching it. To be honest, I'm not going to lie. The reality is I wasn't watching it. Everyone around me was watching it. All my friends, oh my God, have you seen this on Twitter? Have you seen this on Instagram? Sending me stuff. And every time I'd speak to them on the phone, they're like, oh my gosh. And so then I was bugging out about it, just from secondhand information.
Yeah.
And then obviously, I just kind of got tired of it. So I was just like, yeah, can everyone stop talking about it? I mean, I stopped talking about it as well because I kept on talking about it every minute.
Yeah.
So I kind of stopped myself from talking about it and then, stopped watching the news.
Yeah. I think
I feel like that's even... Go on.
Yeah.
I was just gonna say, yeah, I feel like that's even worse sometimes. You know, like when if you're not even watching it, but other people are telling you, and then it's like the way they tell you makes it even sound worse. So.
Yeah. And we've got to realize
that everyone made me scared. That's why I didn't watch it.
Yeah. We've got to realize as well, the news is like Chinese whisper as well, because, you know, they might have said this and somebody else passes it on, and it's by the time it gets down to you, it's something else. You know, it's anybody that looks like this dies of COVID-19, but maybe that's not what they've said. You know, but when, if we talk about news,
what did you used to call it then, Mark?
Huh? Oh, I used to call it COVID-19, COVID-19. Like, I swear, my mind was so gone. In all my materials, I was writing, even at breakfast, at work, and I was like, COVID. And then I just thought, I was thinking, there was no N in co, it's co, about to convict. Because me, you know, at one point, I was like, this is a con. Like, 2020 was supposed to be legendary. Like, what is going on? But yeah, with the news, I think
it still is legendary. We got Corona, isn't it?
So. Oh yeah, not positive legendary, but you know, when we talk about the news, I realized I lost the plot once when I started doing my own data analysis of the numbers they were churning. So like, I literally was like, I remember that day. I think it was 8,000 cases confirmed, and 400 people died. So I was working at the percentages. And I was like, okay, this is not that bad. It's about 5%. Okay, so, and I remember I felt like 30 minutes, and we all know that math is not my thing. I literally was learning math. I was catting. Then my husband was like, what are you doing? I was like, I'm trying to educate myself. These people, these numbers, where are they getting it from?
I remember you telling me that. I remember you telling me you was doing data analytics, and I've never heard you use that word before. So I was just like, "What? Why are you?"
Yeah, I literally.
Like, I didn't even say anything. I was just like, "Okay, cool."
I was like, "Okay, that's 5%. 5% is bad, actually. If it was 1%, I'd be less scared. 5%. I just, you know. Anyway, okay. So yes. Your turn, Esther. The word lockdown.
Like, it just makes me miss going out, really, because I can't really go anywhere. Obviously, the stuff that I do with music, I'm having to go out all the time, so I'm just in the house on lockdown. It just feels like I'm, you know, like when you're young and you're not allowed to go out.
Yeah.
It feels like that, but on an extreme level.
Yeah.
That's how I feel about lockdown.
For me, I've never really, I've been saying to you, I don't know if it's you, Esther, I mean, I've been saying, like, I feel like my actual life is a lockdown, because I don't go out that much normally. Like, I go out once a month, or I'm not always out and about that much. And I think this has really shown me that when this is all over, I need to revamp, because I work from home. I just stay at home and I go out once in a while. So it's like, when everyone's complaining, losing their mind that they can't go out, I'm like, well, this is what I normally do. If I moan, I might be pretending, because it's not like I'm out every minute, you know. But then you call going to the gym and just doing just basic stuff, you call that really living, then I don't agree. But I do miss being able to go to the gym and doing all that stuff. But I've had a lot of reflection thinking, wow, this lockdown is actually my real life. What about you, Manuel?
Yeah, I think I'm quite similar, actually. I think, I would have, before the lockdown, I would have said to myself, I'm quite, you know, I don't really go out that much, I think.
Yeah.
I like being in. But then whilst in lockdown, I realised, oh, wow, I actually do go out quite a bit. And it's actually, and I always thought to myself, I don't really need to go out. Like, if someone says, oh, there's a party going on, I'm like, you know, I don't have to go. But now I'm realizing, oh, I really miss the social aspect.
Yeah.
You know, like, not even going out kind of thing. Just, you know, bumping into someone, you know, when you're out and doing shopping or something, or just meeting new people and just having conversations. So all that stuff. Even kind of like weirdly, like you even miss like the routine of just getting up and going to work and, you know, seeing those faces that you always see. And just the little things has been weird to see how much you miss it.
Yeah. I really miss going out to the office, actually. I do. Okay, so the last one I want us to do, we just do this one together, is stay alert. Who wants to go first?
I just think of people coughing.
Stay alert, stay alert. If you're not from the UK, you know, this week we got told that, you know, before the slogan was stay at home, but now it's stay alert. You know, what is that? What about you, Esther? What has that brought to you? Stay alert.
I still don't really care about all of it. Until they allow us to go out, I don't really care about the updates because, like, that's just me being honest. I actually don't care about any of the updates because they keep saying, there was a stupid thing, like, no offence to Boris, innit, but Boris was saying, oh, if you can go out, go out. If you don't go out, stay inside, stay inside. If you don't want to stay inside, you can go out. If you want to go to work, go to work. But if you don't go on public transport, but if you can go to work, go to work. But if you, it's just, I don't actually care.
Until they say when it's coming from Boris as well.
I don't even care.
When it's coming from
just
Boris,
not
as well,
serious.
Just like,
I can't take anything seriously.
Like, who is this guy, bro?
Like, it's just, who are you? Someone asked him what shampoo he uses. He said he doesn't know what shampoo he uses. This guy's talking about shampoo on the news. He said, I don't know what shampoo I use, but I know it's in a blue bottle. It's plastic. Actually, we need to lower the plastic because of carbon. Like, what are you talking about?
He's like, hey, having babies during COVID-19. It's like, this guy's just...
That's a lot of people.
Yeah, he's probably got like 12 babies.
He's wild,
yeah.
And they've all got the same hairstyle.
People say that Boris...
Boris,
he's got loads of baby mamas.
And even the other day as well, Donald Trump, they were asking him, like, well, what's going on? Like, and one lady was asking him in the conference, like, oh, yeah, what's going on? Why do you think COVID started? And he was like, go ask China, innit? Obviously, she was Chinese, innit? Or I don't know, she might have been Japanese. And he was like, go.
If the country is not at level one, I'm not going anywhere. We're at level four. So I don't know how alert you need to stay. But and do you have anything you want to add to that, Emmanuel? What do you get from stay alert?
I just think people are fed up, to be honest. I think eventually people are just going to ignore it all and just come out. Because even already, if you look outside, it's true.
People are having parties.
Yeah, like if you, and this is like it's coming up to the peak point of summer now. And it's like, okay, I'm either going to have a barbecue or I'm not. But I feel like
people
are going
to
be
serious. People need to be serious. This is a deadly thing, guys.
it's going down. As soon as you see it's going down, you're just like, it just gets you confident. You're like, okay, cool.
I saw a meme. Someone said, I love how America just ignored coronavirus and just carried on as normal. Okay. So, yeah, that was quite good. I wish we could do that a bit more. I've got more list, but let's move on. So, you know what? What I wanted to ask both of you was, when this whole coronavirus thing started, and, you know, you heard things like 12 weeks, lockdown, I really felt sad. Like, you know, there was just a sense of, what is happening? Did anybody else feel that way? Like, just the fear of the unknown.
What would you say?
Did you feel a sense of the fear of the unknown? You know, like, now we're like, almost 10 or 12 weeks in, and it just feels like it's a breeze. Like, as in the time has gone, you know, but at the beginning, when you were hearing things like 12 weeks, 8 weeks, lockdown, it felt really a lot. No?
Yeah, I think you're right. I think... Yeah. Did you want to say something, Esther?
No, you can say what you're saying.
No, I was just going to say, I think you're right. I think it did feel a bit daunting. And it was, you know, I was saying 12 weeks and all this stuff. But for me, it didn't really seep in. It took a while for me to really like feel anything about it. Because I just, for me, it was just noise. And, you know, you were seeing all the people doing like excessive shopping and all this extra stuff. And it just felt, it felt kind of surreal, but yeah. It didn't register to me for a couple of weeks. And then after those few weeks, I was like, oh, wow, what if everything really goes tits up? And what are you meant to do? What's the plan? And you having weird conversations with people, like, you know, what's your survival tactic?
And I guess for me as well, during that process, I had this thought of Africa. There was a point I thought about Africa, especially when the UK, when Nigeria closed the doors for the UK. You know, there was a time these African countries, they were closing the doors because they were like, no, we don't want you here because Europe is a center for coronavirus. There was a point, around early March, you had countries like Nigeria and Ghana closing their doors, saying that nobody coming from Europe. And at that point, I started having these ideas of just, oh my God, all this time we felt that we were in the developing country. And now, I've never seen that before, where Africa shuts the door on the West. I've never seen it, but maybe this happened in history, but I don't know. But sorry if connect to me. But yeah, so I'm just thinking, what did you at some point got your got an idea about Africa at some point during that time?
Esther, did you want to say something earlier?
No.
Okay. Yeah. No. To be honest, I didn't think about Africa. I didn't think it was weird. The thing I was thinking about a lot was if the water stops. I don't know why, but I was just thinking about if something happened and because of this coronavirus, running water stopped, and I was just like, oh, I need to buy loads of bottled water. And that was my first thought. It took a while for me to start really thinking outside of the UK and of Africa, because the numbers were so small, back then, and it was it didn't look like it was going to grow. I didn't even think it was going to grow that badly here back then. I remember when I'm in Manchester, so I remember there were about five people who had it in Manchester, and I was like, cool. And then 2 weeks later, we all had to go home and go, oh,
Yeah. So the reason why I even asked that, because we've got our dad in Nigeria as well, so I just thought maybe there was just some thought about Africa or even other developing countries and how this must be affecting them, because we always feel as if like we're fine in the West, but this COVID thing has really taught me that no, you're living in a bubble, you're not fine. People in that profession, in your profession, there's a way you work, then there's a personality to each profession. So good we can talk about that, put a bit of corporate heart on it. I feel like there's a profession, there's a mindset, there's a mindset to every career. Do you know what I mean? Creative people, they're a certain way. Medical people, they're a certain way. Even I've got a nurse that lives near me, and here's me, my big mouth, saying, oh my God, hello, I'm so proud of you, thank you. I should come and clap for you. And she just looked at me like, what? Someone's got to be brave. Yeah, someone's got to do it.
But I never was aware of that respect level for them. Like they always say Nigerian parents want you to be doctors, lawyer, engineer. So I just always thought, they just make good money and they just like work really hard and they're just really smart. But I never actually saw the character in actually dedicating your life to doing that and putting yourself at risk as well. So it's like, I think, yeah, definitely a newfound respect.
Yeah. Esther, you want to add anything? What does generosity mean to you guys?
I think it's just about being selfless and trying to help someone else without thinking about what you're going to get in return.
What about you, Manal?
Yeah, no, I think generosity. For me, I kind of struggle with generosity. I think when I was definitely younger, generosity didn't come naturally to me. I didn't feel a particular need to be generous. And I don't know. It's just something that I never thought of. But then I think one time, if you guys remember, we went to Nigeria. Like when I was like a teenager, I think I was like 13 or 14 or something like that. And that was the first time I kind of realized that some people are just born into unfortunate circumstances, you know, like, but all of our parents are like, they all come from, you know, they both come from Nigeria, and they both come from not necessarily affluent backgrounds at all. They both come from what you'd consider rural, lower class Nigeria, like village Nigeria kind of thing. And I don't know how they managed to do it, but they managed to find their way into, you know, the UK and sort of give us the opportunities that you know, people would die for, kind of thing. And going back to Nigeria that time made me realize that those people who are still in those villages and, you know, working day to day, I could have easily ended up in that position. I could have easily been in that environment or grown up in that environment and not had the opportunities I did. And I think that's where my idea of generosity was formed. It's like, okay, cool. You have to be generous because you have to be aware that everything you have is not by your power, kind of thing. It's literally, you had nothing to do with it. So once you're aware of that, I feel you feel the responsibility to help other people, and you feel the responsibility to help people who have not been as lucky as you.
Mm.
And I think over time, I've been able to get that idea. But definitely didn't think about it before.
Yeah. And then saying that, you know, with the pandemic and stuff, you actually thought of an idea of helping less fortunate people in Africa, right? Do you mind just going into that a little bit more? Like, do you mind just introducing that?
Yeah, sure. Yeah, to be honest, necessarily, the idea didn't come from nowhere, I should say. I think, and it was definitely inspired by a lot of people in the family and sort of my friends. One of my friends actually did a fundraising herself for her family, like for people in the local area. And she was able to quickly sort of, you know, get money to people who needed it. And it was sort of a you see someone do something, so especially someone that you know well, you see them do something and it really inspires you, kind of thing. And there was a lot of other things going on, just conversations going on within the family. So as you said earlier, our dad, I don't even know what to call it, but daddy was in Nigeria, and I was talking to him, and he was telling me about, he was very, he was just reflecting on Nigeria and telling me that people are suffering in Nigeria, and just talking about it a lot. And even when I spoke to mummy as well, she was the same way. She was, you know, constantly sending me those random videos of, you know, people fighting for food and, you know, just everything just being chaotic. So I think all of those things together just made me feel a responsibility and an opportunity as well to help. Because if there's any good time to help someone else, is like a moment like this where everybody is, to be honest, scared. Everybody doesn't know what's going to happen next. So I think being helpful and being generous is the most impactful at a time like now. And it's also selfish as well, because it's a way of coping. You know, if you're panicking about COVID-19 and you're worried, you know, what's going to happen, if you take a moment to help, you know, a neighbor or help someone else, it makes you feel better. And that's the truth. A lot of the time, generosity can also be selfish.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. I think for me as well, I feel like it's always about trying to think about yourself first, actually, funny enough. And I think in helping yourself, you can help others, you know, which is sort of the same thing we're saying. But I think for me, I've had this new vision of, do you know what? In fact, actually try and better yourself. It's like even with the rappers, they always talk about doing so well so they can help the hood that they've come from. They talk a lot about that. It's, you know, even Jay-Z says it, like, you know, while instead of you going out to buy, you know, the nice places, come back and invest in the hood. Not the hood, but, you know, where they've come. You know, so, yeah, you can help, but you need to be able to think about how you can better yourself in order to help. Esther, do you want to add anything at this point regarding, like, the idea that Emmanuel had and stuff?
Yeah, I think when Emmanuel mentioned it, I felt like it was a really good idea, because it's like a lot of the time we see a lot of people struggling in loads of countries, and a lot of people just kind of go, oh my God, that's so sad. People kind of just get on with their like day-to-day lives and focus on their day-to-day problems. So I think it's nice to actually be a part of something that's actually helping people like in a different country that we don't know, but we know that our help is going to be like very much appreciated. So when he mentioned it, I thought it was really good that he wanted to actually do something about it, and not just say, oh, let's have a discussion about it. Do you know what I mean? Because there's so many people that have discussions and speak on these topics and write loads of paragraphs on social media, but, oh my God, you guys retweet this to help someone in Africa. But it's like a retweet is really not going to feed a whole family that's suffering in a pandemic. So to actually be able to be a part of something that's actually having like real life impact is really cool.
And I think just to go into that straight away, is that I think the way we all thought that we could help is just reaching out to our network. And what we've done so far is we've come together, we found the people that we want to help, and we've reached out to our family and friends. And as we're speaking right now, Manuel, we've raised how much?
Actually, let me just look at it. So we've raised £597. That's 27% towards our total goal.
Yeah.
And £22 will feed a family. And again, just to be clear on what the thought was. So the idea was to feed and support the people most in need. And from sort of the stories we heard and sort of the social structure of Nigeria, it seems that the people most in need are single parents household mothers who don't have a husband in the house and have to look after the kids, and are sort of typically used to working in trade and working day to day to really find something to eat, and that is the focus. And just £22, which is roughly about 10,000 naira, will actually provide them with enough to be able to you know, maintain and manage their family for up to a month. And it's really amazing that we've been able to raise that much. You know, £597 will feed a lot of mothers and a lot of families. So
yeah,
and really big thank you to all our friends and family who've really supported there. It's been a really nice feeling.
Yeah, so it's been a really good time, and I think for me, I want to say thank you actually to both of you for like doing this and letting us do it, because it's just allowed us to connect more. Because even during the COVID, well, during this time, you do check in on people, and it's like there's only so much checking you can do. Oh, have you eaten? What have you done? Okay, not today. You know, since we've been working, since we've been working on this project, there's actually been other things to talk about and actually realize, oh my God, this person, you know what I mean? Like really having that normal sibling life, you know?
That's the thing, we don't really get that much time together, us three, because everyone's in different places, and obviously we all interact individually. Like I'll talk to Esther, and I'll talk to you, and then you talk to us, and you talk to me. But we don't really get a chance to just be us together all the time.
Yeah,
And yeah, okay. I think it's a good opportunity to do that, and it's been interesting and fun.
It's been good. And it's been good. So yeah, so we decided that we really wanted to focus on single mothers, and I think for me, I want to show a little story about that as well. Even because sometimes one thing I'm very passionate about, I like to point out, is that we sometimes look at poverty line as we focus too much on the extreme of like maybe poverty, and we don't realize that, you know what, even people living in this country or people that actually have a job, I know it's not as bad as having a few square meal, actually go through stuff that within that economy it's low, you know. And you know, during this time, I've actually realized that, you know what, when we've heard news of people jumping on the buses, people not, you know, some, you know, especially BAME communities, a lot of people in the black communities, black, Asian, ethnic minority communities have been really suffering with COVID the most, you know. I don't have the statistics on me right now, but it got me thinking as well, like, because, you know, we moved here, you know, I moved here about 20 odd years ago. And I think that time we were just starting out in this country, you know, and even some days I would think there are children of these people that are out there, you know, fighting COVID. They are probably young like me when I was young, then, you know, when I was like 10 and Manu was 5, you know, and Esther was like 1. Our mum was out there, you know, and we could, and our dad was in Africa, and we, you know, I just relate to this whole single mother thing. I don't know why. I just relate to it. Like, how must those women in Nigeria feel where the government has shut everything down, no money? And let's not forget, Nigeria as a country, for these types of people, they don't get paid on a monthly basis. Their pay is paid, you know, you earn as you earn as you work, you know. And I think, you know, and I said, what kind of things do you do? Shall we buy and we sell? So in the middle of this project, when this podcast is coming out, me and Emmanuel can add to that as well. That some of these women, we've spoken to them. Do you want to talk about some of these stories that you've encountered during this process, Emmanuel?
Yeah, sure. I think the main thing for me has been just speaking Yoruba. I think that has been.
We'll get to that. But the human story first.
Yeah, no, and I guess the human story is that there is a lot of the fact that we've been speaking to them directly is definitely sort of
I can't hear you.
Can you hear me now?
Yeah.
So I was just saying, the fact that we've been speaking to them directly has definitely made me more open and aware of you know, what people are going through. There's many situations where, you know, people are, they seem scared even just to speak to someone and really start to, you know, have a conversation with anyone, really, kind of thing. And then, but when you start getting them to talk, and they start explaining how, you know, the lockdown situation in Nigeria has really meant they have to sort of choose between getting COVID-19 or not eating, kind of thing, and or risking getting COVID-19 and not eating, because a lot of the work that they do, you know, is either the woman taja, or like sell, you know, goods on the day to day, or do, you know, labor work from day to day to actually work to buy food. And I think that aspect of it, the fact that, you know, you're working day to day and you make your earnings to actually eat and live every day, lockdown is not really an option. And if you are forced to lock down, it's at a very high cost, especially when you've got children to look after. And the other aspect of it as well is, you know, for me, it's been sort of the awareness of the combination of COVID-19 lockdown and the food shortages in Nigeria, and sort of it creates real panic. You know, I can't imagine, it's like you don't have hope, you know, like if you can't make money to eat and you can't go outside, and even when you do make money, the food outside is getting more and more expensive every day because of the food shortage and the lockdown. It's like there's no hope, and that is really what the idea and the ambition behind this is to really not the money that we're given is little. You know, £22 is not going to last them for the rest of their lives, and it's not going to change their lives at all. But £22, like, from nowhere, for anyone, even for me, if I get £22 and I didn't know it was coming, I'll be pretty happy. Yeah. And it's like the idea of getting money that you're not expecting when you really, really need it. I think that feeling, to be able to give somebody that feeling, is especially in this time, is amazing. And I can't thank the donors enough for allowing us to give those people that feeling.
Yeah, I you know, even for me as well, I agree with everything that Emmanuel and Esther said, and even me talking to some of these women has really humbled me and really made me thought, what more could we do? And I remember speaking to one woman particularly, and I'm one of those people, I get drawn to people very easily, and I was trying not to do it, but this woman, she, by the time I told her, I said, how many kids do you have? She said, oh, three. And she goes, oh, sorry, one is dead. I said, oh, okay. I was like, okay, sorry for your loss. No, it's okay. I don't mean being lazy. I was like, okay, why, you know, how did your child pass away? Oh, no money for medical treatment. You were sick. I didn't want to probe any further because I just didn't want to even feel more sadder. Mm. I could just imagine maybe if I said, what was the sickness? For all I know, it could be something so basic. And this a child has gone on that. And furthermore, okay, why are you a single mother? Oh, my husband has passed on as well. So, well, how old are you? 40. You know, how old are you? And I'm not saying this doesn't happen to people in developed countries or whatever, but I'm just saying, like, their situation. And so, you know, speaking to some of these women, and even some of them, they don't even know their children's age. You know, they don't even know how to spell. They don't know how to, you know, get numbers, because we've been trying to do things in a very transparent way to them. You know, things were just really hard for them. So if anything, even one of them, I said, how do you get by normally anyway? She said, oh, we sell and work, we make on the day, we take the profit to eat, and then we buy again and we resell, you know. And you can just see that this is such a good skill that they've developed with nothing.
Yeah. And that's the thing. I think that's so important to say as well, because I think a lot of the times, you know, when you're in the UK, it's easy to say, oh, people are in less developed countries. But these are strong women. These are, like, very, and it shows even when you were talking, and they've been through so much, but they keep going, and they're not shy. They're not timid. Like they're very confident. One of the women was just cursing me out even like when I called her, because I think because of my Yoruba was so bad, she couldn't understand me. She just like, can I come in, so like, get off my phone, like. And I was like, oh wow, okay, cool. And I had to like calm her down and tell her, you know, what we're trying to do. And I think that is really important to highlight, and it's what makes me love, you know, Nigeria, and it's what makes me love the Nigerian people. It's like, in any circumstances, the pride is there, and dignity there.
Not bad pride, good pride, you know.
Yeah, good pride, yeah. Yeah. Nigeria Eagle pride, yeah.
Okay, we're getting to the end of this now. So let's just talk about how we've all bonded just doing this, you know. So let me start, actually, sorry. Me and Emmanuel really bonded because we've been speaking to these women and had to speak Yoruba to them.
Yeah.
And I'm not gonna lie, guys, and this is gonna be on record here. I actually always thought between the three of us, my Yoruba was the best and I was good. I'm born in Nigeria. I lived in Nigeria for a bit. I understand Yoruba movie. All of that is out of the window. I am down here with you guys now. Mm-hmm. Because those women, they showed me Guinea. Hello. I said, for you, Lowo. As in, it's getting better now. And I think we probably have any language. You just keep practicing Guinea better. But with those women, my Yoruba is whack. How have you found it, Mina?
I would agree. I would say my Yoruba, the thing about my Yoruba is that my Yoruba is like, learned Yoruba. It's like you can tell that I learned Yoruba from watching movies and old movies of that, like, because it's not new Yoruba. It's very A B C D E kind of thing.
It's not A B C.
That's the alphabet.
You guys don't know the Nigerian alphabet.
That's because you got ship, so
regardless, I still know it. Are you doing?
Let's keep it light. That was good. Do that again.
No.
I think definitely speaking to the women has improved my Yoruba. But it's still not great. But I'm glad at least I can get across a simple message.
And that's as well, like when I'm saying like how we've all bonded, have you all enjoyed this? Like before even you answered
about so many different things. So when I saw the money going up and stuff, it was really nice to see people actually like supporting what we're to do.
Yeah. How's it been working with us? Or what's working with you? How's it been, guys?
It's been nice, to be honest. It's been interesting because we've never actually worked together on something. Not that I can remember anyways. It's been interesting, like it's been good to like just kind of do something positive together. Like, even if we never do something like this again, like we're always gonna have the memory of like, oh, do you remember when COVID-19 happened and we helped those families out in Nigeria together?
Yeah.
So it's nice to have that memory together, I guess.
Yeah. So, what's our call to action, guys? So, what do we want listeners to do for these women, like? Esther, you start. Plead, ask, tell people your.
£22. We want £22. Give us £22 each. We'll not ask the family. Help them out, because at the end of the day, you're probably going to pay for a Netflix subscription for $7.99 or buy some snacks or order some food on delivery for about £20. But you can just help a family out in Africa. So give us £22 to help the families.
Yeah.
Emmanuel?
Definitely support us. If you listen to this podcast and you support what we're doing and you think it's a good idea, definitely feel free to support us. Visit the Just Giving page, look at our updates. If you want to donate what you can. And I think it's definitely keeping sort of that idea that during this COVID-19, I think the best thing anybody can do is help someone else. Definitely try and push that spirit in whatever way you can, hopefully. I'm definitely trying the best I can to do that moving forward.
Yeah. I guess for me as well, it's the same thing. You know, we've really tried. We've got about 22% of what we're trying to aim. Our aim is 2,200. And just please, we really would love for you to just dip into your pockets. And also, I know it's a very challenging time as well, but even anything that you can, just put it in there, it will add up, right? Please donate. And I think that's about it. But before we go, guys, I want to ask you a very important question, actually, quickly. Because this is Deborah's Corporate Heart Talk, let's not forget, shout out to Deborah's Corporate Heart Talk, is if you had to give one career advice at this stage of both of your careers, and even mine as well, what career advice would you give somebody? So, Esther, what career advice would you give somebody listening to this right now?
I think for me personally, obviously I do music. I've recently been very I've recently realized the importance of having three different hobbies. So having a hobby that keeps you creative, having a hobby that keeps you active, and having a hobby that keeps you, makes you money. Now, for a long time, with me, I've only focused on the hobby that keeps me creative. And in this time, obviously, been stuck at home, you know, with the internet, I've been doing a lot of research into different ways to make money, different ways to stay active. And I think it's important as young people to utilize the internet. We have so many opportunities on the internet. Like, for example, I don't necessarily do this myself, but just from people around me and things, we've got Forex trading, drop shipping, affiliate marketing, so many different things that you can actually utilize to help yourself potentially build a sustainable way of making money. And if you're not somebody that wants to work maybe in the corporate sector or the retail sector, and that's not really something that you're interested in, I think it'll be really important in this time to maybe try and learn a skill that you can kind of utilize long term, which I'm actually currently learning a skill, which is drop shipping. So I think anyone that's trying to do anything, just the rule of having three different hobbies, which is the hobby that keeps you creative, the hobby that keeps you active, and a hobby that makes you money. For me, I'm focusing a bit more on the one that's going to make me money now. So yeah, if you guys can just focus on those different three things, like one at a time, you should definitely be fine, whatever it is you're doing.
That's good. And you're more than welcome to come back to talk to us about dropshipping.
I'm still learning, so well, definitely way. By the time I come back, I'll be making moolah off dropshipping.
Manuel?
Yeah, I think my advice would be, and it's, I guess it's something I'm constantly working on, and it's sort of trying to utilize your passion. And I think I've always been someone who I always thought it was very difficult to find a passion. Some people can find a passion and dedicate their lives to it. Some people have many different things they're interested in. Some people are not interested in anything at all. But I think everyone has something that they would do for free, whether that's as simple as watching YouTube videos or eating or cooking. And I think a great way in whatever career you're in is to utilize your passion and utilize what you're interested in. And I think it goes for anyone. You know, if you are a lawyer and you work in a corporate world and you love to make people laugh, utilize and leverage that sense of humor. You know, maybe you could be part of a speaking community, or you could hold events where you get to opportunity to actually make people laugh, and it could work in your favor. Or if you are, you know, an artist and you love to, like Esther was saying, you know, you love to either Forex trade or you love to invest in property. You know, leverage that, you know, make that, you could invest in studios, you could invest in, you know, music brands or streaming websites. I think trying to always find a way to leverage your passion will just make you happier, I think.
Yeah, okay. That's a really, really good one, guys. Well, everyone here that listens to this knows some of the things that I talk about. But I think for this episode, I think one thing I would like to say is, you know, is really try and separate your personal identity with what you do. And I know for some people in their career or in their, you know, in what they do is hard. And it's, but I really think that's one of the career advice I would actually give anybody is, separate your identities. Your work is your work and your other life is your life. And in doing that, you don't sacrifice too much that if you have to lose out, you've lost everything, right? I've always said, you know, companies and, you know, don't get too attached to companies and projects and your identity just embedded on it. So if you have to separate it, it feels really messy. It's like separating salt and sugar. It's not possible, right? So try your best to just have your identity in what you're doing, what you're about, and have your work as well separately. That's one thing that I think I'm learning in my life right now. So yeah, that's about it, guys. Unless if you have any questions or anything you want to add, I don't know where you're being, I don't know what struggles you have right now, but all I can say to you is keep going and your big break around the corner. Until next time, goodbye.
you for listening to Deborah's Corporate Heart Talk. You can visit my website at www.deborah.tech. Follow me on all social media platforms at Deborah's Heart Talk. And to get involved in all the conversations, please hashtag Deborah's Heart Talk. And remember, guys, keep going and your big break is around the corner. Until next time, bye-bye.